Good evening. I'd like to call this meeting to order, the City of Palm Coast City Council Business Meeting. It is Tuesday, February 4th, 2020. It is 6 p.m. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Holland.
Here.
Vice Mayor Clufus.
Present.
Councilmember Brian Quino. Absent. Councilmember Cuff.
Present.
Councilmember Howell.
Present.
Thank you. Now open up to public participation. Any member of the public wishes to make public comment on items not on the agenda. You have up to 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin.
Go ahead. Council, Mayor. My name is Mary Leckie, a homeowner on London Drive. Prior to moving to Palm Coast, I practiced law in Connecticut for some 20 years. When plans for conversion of Matanzas Golf Course were presented by the developer, over 200 homeowners presented with strong opposition and varied property-related concerns. Based on facts readily available, our concerns now include the health and safety of our families. It is a fact that there are significant and unique issues relating to golf course conversions. There exist plentiful news articles and other government action concerning these issues. Most disturbing are the environmental concerns. Arsenic and other chemicals are in the soil that could cause health and safety hazards if unearthed, or worse, cause water contamination for newly built homes. Stormwater management. Golf courses provide stormwater storage for surrounding developments. The L section already experiences flooding with its 277 acres of open space. When filled with homes, where will the water go? There are many other issues as well. Some local governments have acted with prudence, recognizing the financial harm and potential dangers that exist. Others, however, have leapt ahead haphazardly, I speculate, for financial gain, debt reduction, or at worst, the simple idleness of their government officials who are admittedly underpaid for the responsibility to which they hold. Quick and unthoughtful action has cost cities millions in taxpayer dollars. If the golf course conversion is inevitable, it is imperative that this government act responsibly now. Do not use the L section as your test laboratory. If the city fails to act responsibly after being put on notice of potential harm to the health and welfare of the citizens and such harm later occurs, the city will surely find itself exposed to liability claims for years to come, and that is a fact. I urge the mayor and the council to consider a moratorium on rezoning application of the Matanzas course or any related golf course conversion in Palm Coast until such time as the mayor and pertinent government officials, in conjunction with the citizens of Palm Coast, have conducted due diligence on these issues. Be it known that the city is now formally put on notice on the record that facts exist to support a moratorium on this issue. I am reminded of the United States Supreme Court case in which Justice Douglas stated the concept of public welfare is broad and inclusive, that the values it represents are spiritual as well as physical, aesthetic as well as monetary, and it is within the power of the legislature to determine that the community should be beautiful as well as healthy, spacious as well as clean, well-balanced as well as carefully protected.
Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Phyllis Robin Scheffler. In the hierarchy of city management, the city manager is at the apex of a triangle who is responsible for the oversight of all city departments. Therefore, it would be his concern to see that all function maximally. So if the permitting department is lax in assuring that the proper revenue flows from its coffers, it becomes the responsibility of the city manager to examine the reasons for this malfunction. Having reread the interviews given by the city manager to the Daytona News Journal, I have some difficulty in crystallizing some statements. He touts the experience of the chief development officer, Jason DiLorenzo, who has served elsewhere for 5 years as an advocate for contractors. The city manager goes on to say that by adding a developer-friendly member of the local building trade to Palm Coast roster does not mean that the city plans to ease standards. All that is planned is to be consistent in their execution and do a better job in the customer service communication. He said that we, the management, need to be stewards of the quality of life. He said that he values citizen input and engagement. I hope so. This is a big plus. He said residents are our best tactical strategists. They have a passion and knowledge. I love to hear people's ideas, but also their ideas for solution. I've been trying. On the other hand, the interview with Flag Alive paints a somewhat different direction. In this piece, the city manager said that DiLorenzo's appointment, he intends to change the perception of a department that has for years seen as anti-business. He hopes to initiate a check on impact fees. He looks for deputies or managers with solid experience. With DiLorenzo's appointment, a loud signal is being sent to the development community that it intends to have its interests at heart. The question is, how does Palm Coast not send the message that builders and smaller contractors have a blank check at City Hall, plus the openings for a scheming contractor to lie on the permit application for his benefit? Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Council. Perry Matrano, 207 London Drive. I'm not here to talk about the Matanzas situation as much as I'd like to. But I am here to say I want to thank you for the opportunity for the Citizens Academy. I found it very fascinating. I've been living here for 15 years, and although I applied a couple of times, I kept getting knocked out because it was very popular. And I highly recommend the rest of the citizens that come to all these meetings to go to that type of training and get to understanding how this all works, why we have to approach it the way it is. Mr. Morton gave an excellent speech and really straightforward to the point. And the good news is your parks and recreation staff was sensational. They were really, really good. You could hear it in their heart and their voice and how much they care about their parks. And that was a nice, refreshing thing. So I just thought I'd bring a little bit of warmth and love to the board, and hopefully we'll get that back, too, from all of you one day as well. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Thank you for letting me speak today. My name is Silvia Puglisi. I am here to give a big thank you to the mayor, the council, and Mr. Morton, and our administrators for the meeting that was held for the Florida Park residents. It was very well set up, and I think was very well attended. And I just want to bring two more points and some color copies that I made to leave with Mr. Morton for some suggestions. I found that in the meeting, some of the people that live in the Florida Park Drive with the tree landscape that they were proposed, they were concerned that they will take more of the right-of-way and will bring the the traffic closer to them. So I originally go back to what I request when Mr. Butler, he was here about 12 years ago, which I suggested those beautiful grasses that they have all along the parkway to have in between the sidewalk that never was built but never had a landscape, to have those nice, like along the Intracoastal can be seen along Palm Coast Parkway, Belterre, and in Holland Park. And they are beautiful and they are very resilient. Maybe to have those along Florida Park Drive like I requested 2 years ago, between the sidewalk and the curb. And also to consider the installation and do some research on these soft humps that I mentioned before, and I gave a copy to our mayor, that are all over Maricopa County and in Arizona. Within 5 years ago when they started having all this growth, to be able to slow down the traffic. So I have these copies here, and I appreciate what the city has done for us, and I hope that the city continues in the same venue. That's all. Can I give this? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Next speaker.
Jack Carroll. At the last workshop, I asked where you got your information that the people objected to the dollar store. I got no answer. I'll ask again. Where did this council get their information that the public and the people of Palm Coast do not want a dollar store? Now, the people I asked, as I said before, half of them didn't care one way or the other if there was a dollar store or not. And the other half were thankful there was a dollar store. It saved them money, saved me travel time, and it was cheaper for them to go into a dollar store than to go into other stores. I don't understand why a moratorium was picked in one day, in one week. I remember back when, a little while back, I don't know if anybody remembers it, but there was a moratorium on something that had to be built. And it took them a month and a half to okay the moratorium. Seems like you people do things really special, like Superman. 1 week to establish a moratorium on the small stores, which I don't know where you get your information from, but I don't understand why a quick moratorium. That's all I got to say about that. This is the only council since I remember that had so many absentees. So many absentees. It's ridiculous. If you're here for the job, do the job. If you got another job that's more important, quit. Get the hell out.
Thank you for your comments, Jack. Next speaker.
What's that?
Next speaker.
Hello, everybody. Dennis McDonald. That's going to be hard to follow, that one.
With your lawsuits.
I'm here to talk to you about a common item that comes back to us at Protect Palm Coast, the website and the organization that was set up originally to hold on to the Palm Harbor Golf Course and to stop the MPD that had been planned and now is in abeyance someplace. Here's one of the comments that comes back to us all the time that people are saying. They're saying that the city, somebody in the city, and nobody's ever specific on it, but people in the city are telling them that, well, if we say anything about the golf course and we oppose it, we're going to lose the driving range and we'll lose the golf course altogether. And constantly we're hearing that. So I did some digging on this, and I've suspected this for some time. And here's the bottom line, and I've sent information to all of you council members. I believe you've got a non-conforming use over there. In 2008, when this was done, I don't think you made any consideration for the parking that's necessary. Now, to prove the point, you go over there on any good day, and the only place you can park a car is about a quarter of a mile away, or if they figure out a way to park a car in a tree. There's no place to park. They park on literally everything that's over there in the radius, any place close to the clubhouse. So when you look at this, it appears to me that there is certainly a non-conforming use. So what we're going to do is we're going to dial in on the number of rounds that are played. I've asked Virginia for that, or asked for that information. Virginia contacted me today and said that she will get me the number of rounds. We'll figure out the number of parking spaces. And I believe what you're going to find is that you guys went in, or not you, the city of Palm Coast went and split off the parking area, and you're trying to use it for another development. So I'm just making you aware of this, and I just want you to say that whoever is putting out this information that you're going to lose the driving range if you push back on the golf course, I don't even think that you've got a conforming a property over there, or the two of them. So we'll look into this in the future. Thank you very much. Appreciate you letting me make you aware of that.
Next speaker.
Steve Carr, Palm Coast. As we see the city grow, we're also seeing the real traffic issue that's coming by it. And we're looking at neighborhoods being inundated with excessive traffic going through their neighborhoods. Me personally, I have witnessed it and still are experiencing it and finding it very difficult for the city to do anything about it. So as the city grows, I really think the residents of Palm Coast need ordinances to protect residential neighborhoods. An ordinance that would like traffic common methods being used to keep excessive traffic out of residential neighborhoods that are being used as thoroughfares. Because this traffic is just getting worse and worse. I've talked to more and more neighborhoods where their traffic is getting bad also. So I would like to ask the city to really look into developing ordinances to protect residential neighborhoods, especially one where there might be traffic common methods used. Thank you.
Next speaker.
John Brady, Palm Coast, old business. I want an answer. What is the status of the $4 million that was appropriated or set aside to make Whiteview Parkway from two lanes in each direction to one lane? What is happening with that? The last I heard, it was on hold. It should be dead. Thank you.
Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Mr. Reichman, if you would just make a comment about the first speaker and quasi-judicial as a reminder, thank you.
Sure. Again, we've had many folks come forward in the past public meetings to raise issues to this council about the potential for the city's receipt of an application for something to do something with the Matanzas Golf, what we refer to as Matanzas Golf Course. As I want to say it again, as we've made very clear last week at the workshop, there is no pending application with the city of Palm Coast at this time for development or redevelopment, whatever you want to call it, for the Matanzas Golf Course. In the event, however, that the city does receive an application for some land use change, a development order for that property, at that point, the staff will review it and apply the appropriate sections of the comprehensive plan and the land development code. And only after that will it be considered by the Planning Commission in its quasi-judicial capacity and then potentially by this council if it gets that far. At this point in time, it is legally inappropriate for any member of this council to be giving an opinion or stating facts or getting into a discussion about something that might happen. And that's because this members of this council aren't legally allowed to do that. Certainly the members of the public have the absolute right to come forward, as we've talked about, and tell us what their, you know, what their concerns are with regard to that golf course. And that's all fine and good. But I would again reiterate and ask those folks to keep in mind that the proper forum where this council will have the legal ability to consider your input and your concerns and legally take those into consideration are when and if and when this matter comes before them in what's called a quasi-judicial process. And that's not what we're doing, because we don't have anything to chew on. There is no application before the city at this point in time. So certainly appreciate your input, but it's you know, when it's relevant and if it's relevant. And at that point in time, I can assure you that everyone will have plenty of opportunity to tell the council what their feelings are, what their concerns are. But that is not tonight.
Okay. Council will move to the approval of the minutes, January 21st, 2019 business meeting, January 28th, 2019 workshop.
Move approval.
I want to mislead.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously.
Mayor, I just was told, and I want to apologize, I was not aware of this, but the city did receive on this Wednesday, a week ago Wednesday, an application, and I'm not even sure what it contains or what it requests. It hasn't come to my attention, but I misspoke because I didn't know. So it is out there, and it'll go through the process. It'll go through the process, and that process doesn't get to this board. Everything else that I said, I stand by. But I was wrong about that, and I just was advised. Didn't know that, Mayor, so I apologize. But apparently the city has received an application. It'll be a week tomorrow. So I want to make sure that didn't misrepresent the facts. Apologize for that.
Can you just talk to the residents that are here tonight about what that process will entail?
Absolutely.
Matt,
go
if
ahead.
You can, or someone?
Go ahead, Bill. Probably you're better.
Sure. So the city apparently has received an application for to do something, to get some sort of development order to develop in some way this property that we're talking about, Matanzas Golf Course. That's going to be reviewed by staff. The first thing they look for is they want to make sure that the application is complete. They're going to want to make sure that all the spaces are filled in and all the exhibits are attached and all the necessary information is either contained in there or provided for with exhibits that are attached to it. Once it's complete, then the staff is going to take it to the various departments to do their due diligence. And when I say that, I mean they've got to take a look at the standards that are going to apply under the comprehensive plan and the Land Development Code. And a lot of those standards are going to deal with the issues that we heard tonight. A lot of the standards that we've heard from other folks. But again, that's going to be staff, members of the Development Services Department, as well as other members of city staff. And they're going to put together a report based upon what they believe is relevant and they may ask for more information from the applicant. But ultimately, it's going to be, if there's a complete application and staff believes that it's ready to be considered to the next level, it's going to go to what we call the Planning and Land Development Review Board, or PLDRB. It's our planning commission. And that is a member of volunteers that again, take a look at the applications and then review them against our land development code and make a recommendation on either approving the application or denying the request. It could be a denial. It could get tabled. It could get sent back to. It really depends upon, you know, what the application is for and the staff's results of their investigation analysis. It depends upon what people have to say when this comes before the PLDRB, and that's a public meeting. It'll be advertised as such, and that's when the public, those folks that are interested in giving some sort of evidence or information or opinions, will have their first bite at the apple to come before the PLDRB. That is a separate body. That is not the city council. It is a body that specifically is for planning. It's a setup by state law separately from this council. If it gets to that point, the next step will be two advertised public hearings before the city council. And again, there'll be plenty of opportunity at both of those meetings for the public to give their input. At the end of the day, this council, if it gets to that point, will be obligated to make sure that any decision that they render will be upon the application of the Land Development Code and the Comprehensive Plan and all of the various elements that will apply to whatever is being asked for, and make sure, because they sit in a quasi-judicial capacity. In other words, they're not making the rules. They're applying the rules, by rules I mean the Land Development Code, to this particular application. So they are in some ways constrained to make sure that the decision they make is consistent with the Land Development Code. There are certain vested rights that every property owner in the city of Palm Coast has at this time when they buy property, and those rights are to use the property consistent with the Land Development Code, the Comprehensive Plan, and the processes for development orders. And by development orders, I mean rezonings, variances, conditional uses, all those different types of changes to whatever it is that you currently own as far as what your rights to develop the property are. So that's it's a lot, but that's just kind of a shorthand nutshell of where this is going to go, Mayor.
Thank you. Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number 2 is a proclamation for Organ Donor Awareness Month. I would ask those receiving the proclamation to come to the podium. Whereas donor awareness encourages Americans to register an organ, eye, and tissue donors and celebrate those who have saved lives through their gifts of donation. Whereas 2019 data shows that every 10 minutes another person is added to the national transplant list, that nearly 114,000 people on the national transplant list, and that 82% of patients waiting are in need of a kidney. And whereas just one individual organ donor can save up to 8 lives, and one tissue donor can save up to 50 lives. Whereas studies show that in most cases, a person's family member will not be an appropriate match, therefore requiring a volunteer donor. Whereas the City of Palm Coast, partnering with Donate Life Florida, the Mayo Clinic of Jacksonville, Florida, and One Blood, will together present a lunch and learn discussion on February 13th and a donor fair on February 14th, both at the Palm Coast City Hall Community Wing, to educate our community on the value of granting the gift of life through transplantation. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed by the Palm Coast Mayor and City Council that February 2020 be declared as Organ Donor Awareness Month in Palm Coast, and express our gratitude to the compassion of Americans who join organ and tissue registries, and in healthcare professionals who make the gift of life possible by performing crucial transplants, adopted this fourth day of February 2020, signed your mayor, Melissa Holland. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Hope Song, and I work in the Information Technology Department here at the City. I'd like to say thank you to Mayor Melissa Holland, as well as the rest of our council members, for allowing the City to host our very first annual donor fair in efforts to raise awareness about the life-saving benefits of blood, organ, and tissue donation. I'm thrilled that the City of Palm Coast will be joining institutions nationwide in recognition of National Donor Day on Friday, February 14th. On this day, a donor fair will be held here at City Hall, along with a corresponding lunch and learn the day prior. The donor fair will run from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m., and it will feature key partners such as Donate Life, Advent Health, One Blood, and Mayo Clinic Jacksonville. Details on the event can be found on our city website at www.palmcoastgov.com. And we encourage all of the citizens of Palm Coast to join us as we celebrate our donor heroes and help to raise awareness on the life-saving benefits of blood, organ, and tissue donation. Thank you. Thank you.
Good evening. I'd like to say first thank you to Mayor Melissa Holland and the rest of the council members for allowing Donate Life Florida to be with you all tonight. My name is Chantel Richardson, and as I said before, I'm representing Donate Life Florida. We are absolutely elated that the City of Palm Coast will recognize National Donor Day on February 14th. This day is an observance dedicated to recognizing those who have given or received the gift of life through organ, eye, and tissue donation, or those who are currently waiting for a life-saving transplant. This day also recognizes the importance of registering as an organ donor. I'd like to take a quick poll of everyone in the room. Just by a show of hands, how many of you all know someone who became an organ donor? How many know someone who has received an organ, eye, or tissue donation? Or how many in the room know someone who is waiting on an organ transplant? Wow. Can we just take a few seconds and give a round of applause just to honor those individuals? Thank you. There are more than 100,000 children and adults that are waiting for an organ transplant here in the United States. And there are more than 5,700 that are waiting right here in our state of Florida. You can make a difference by registering as an organ and tissue donor.
One donor can save up to 8 lives, give the gift of sight to 2 people, and bring healing and mobility up to 75 individuals. Today, we would like to honor an organ donor hero named Patrick by sharing a letter his parents wrote to his organ recipient. And these are in the words of his parents. After looking at the Organ Donor Medal of Honor sent to us in memory of our selfless 27-year-old son, Patrick, I am now able to write this. He died 4 months ago today. He is the young man who made the decision to register as an organ and tissue donor when he renewed his driver's license. His father and I did not know this, but we were not surprised to find out. Pat was known for helping and giving to others. The youngest of 3 boys, he was active in sports, especially near water. He swam, sailed, and surfed. As a little boy, he was a Cub Scout and continued in Boy Scouts throughout high school. He attained the rank of Eagle Scout with brass palms. After high school, Patrick got involved with his town's volunteer fire department and marine rescue units. After every call, he would come home and we would ask, "What happened?" He rarely offered what the call was for. As his parents, we would say, "Patrick, let someone else go in first," or "Don't rush in so fast." His comment was always the same: "It's okay, Mom. It's what I do." Patrick was to start school this past summer to be a paid firefighter, attaining his dream job. At his memorial services, people shared stories of how he would help them during storms, repair cars, drive people to work, help find jobs, dog sit, and give them money even when he was broke. As Patrick was wheeled into the operating room to save his organs, my final words to him after telling him I love him were, "It's okay, Pat. It's what you do." And stories like these are why Donate Life Florida exists. We are here to honor those who have given the most precious gifts, people like Patrick. We work throughout the community to inform, inspire, and register individuals as organ donors. Floridians now have a red heart placed on their driver license whenever they register as an organ and tissue donor. We invite you to show us your heart and consider registering as a donor when renewing your license. As I mentioned before, we are thankful to partner with the City of Palm Coast to share our life-saving mission and also with the community. Thank you.
Hey, the one question you didn't ask in your survey is how many of us are organ donor on our driver's license?
How many are organ donors on your license? Oh, wow. Thank you.
Thank you all.
I think there's one more presenter, though. Would you like to say a few words? Thank you. Yes.
Hi, my name is Jerry Kern. I'm a resident of Palm Coast since 1984, I believe. I am a heart transplant recipient. I fell victim to a virus, and it caused my heart to fail. I was hospitalized for in and out for 2 years, and for the last year, continuously at Florida Hospital Orlando, where I was their 14th heart transplant patient. Organ donation is probably one of the most important things that we can address here by having, and I'm so proud of the City of Palm Coast, and I thank you, the mayor and the council, for taking the opportunity to recognize something that's so dear to my heart, no pun intended. But the year I got my transplant, 1,832 people in the entire United States received heart transplants, among 47,000 either listed or waiting to be listed that were in that critical of a situation. And that's sad. Most of those people did not survive. So the importance of it is truly significant. The other thing is the greatest bargain you can do, because right now there's 2 people, there's 1 right here. So now it's, as you look at it that way. But I do appreciate it. And by having governments such as yourself, which I'm already proud of, to stand up and recognize that, hopefully inspires other people to participate in that program. Thank you.
I just want to add in closing, I mean, many of our team in City Hall know, you know, the last 6 months I have spent by my daughter's bedside waiting for a liver for her. She's 23 years old. For 6.5 years we waited for an organ to finally get the chance. Not only was a complete unbelievable blessing, but when the surgeon came out and said she was within hours of dying, her organs were decomposing. You don't understand that moment until you really recognize how close that could happen and how that could really change your life forever. So to the donor, thank you, because my daughter would not have the ability to have a future, to have future children, all the things of the what ifs. And so it does really make a difference. It matters, and I'm just grateful for it. So thank you for stepping up and sharing your story as well. Thank you for all you do. And I would encourage everyone out there, please consider being an organ donor and save a life. Thank you. Okay, well, now present a proclamation for Rare Disease Day. Councilmember Cuff.
Turn down the AC. We can turn it down again. We turn down the temperature to make it cooler. Okay. Whereas there are nearly 7,000 diseases and conditions considered rare, each affecting fewer than 200,000 Americans in the United States, according to the National Institute of Health. And whereas, while each of these diseases may affect small numbers of rare diseases collectively affect an estimated 30 million Americans, which is 1 in 10 of our population. And whereas many rare diseases are serious and debilitating conditions that have a significant impact on the lives of those affected. And whereas millions of Americans have rare diseases, but fewer than 500 of the nearly 7,000 diseases have FDA-approved treatments. And whereas individuals and families affected by rare diseases often experience problems such as diagnosis delay, difficulty finding a medical expert, and lack of access to treatment or ancillary services. And whereas the National Organization for Rare Diseases is organizing a nationwide observance of Rare Disease Day on February 29th, 2020, and whereas thousands of patients, caregivers, medical professionals, researchers, and others across the state of Florida will participate in that observance, now therefore be it proclaimed by the mayor and the city council of the city of Palm Coast, Florida, that February 29th, 2020 be officially designated as Rare Disease Day in Palm Coast, Florida. Signed this fourth day of February 2020, Mayor Melissa Holland.
Thank you. Okay. We'll now move to agenda item number 4, which is a presentation on the 5th Annual Health and Safety Employee Calendar.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. My name is Carol Minnie. I'm the urban forester for the city of Palm Coast, and I'm also the head of the wellness team. So I'm very excited to be here this evening. I think all the kids are ready to come on up and accept their award. Also joining me and helping me present these awards this evening is Peter Russell. Peter used to be the head of the safety team, and now he's actually passed that along to Ben. But Peter still loves to do this with me, and I always enjoy having him here. So thank you, Peter, for coming. So let's go ahead and get going on this. 2020 Health and Safety Calendar. The calendar contest, it is open to children for our city employees, whether they are nieces, nephews, grandchildren. As long as the employee works for the city, they are allowed to enter. Our age categories are 3 to 6, 7 to 10, 11 to 14, and 15 to 18. The criteria that we look for is 40% originality and their creativity, 10% is the aesthetic quality, 30% is the clarity of their message, and then 20% is to adhere to those contest rules. All right, so we're going to go ahead and start out with our honorable mention. Our first young lady is Viviana Tyner. Unfortunately, Viviana cannot be here, but she is the daughter of Ray Tyner, and she was talking about don't touch bats. You do not want to get scraped by a bat because they could potentially have rabies. So that's awesome. Thank you, Viviana, for that. Now we have Sarah Pinnells, and she is the granddaughter of Marco Poolbill. And she, her topic was, before you cross, look both ways. Then we have Lily Neiman, and she is the daughter of Dan Neiman. And her topic was, don't touch jellyfish with SpongeBob. Come on up, sweetie. All right, here we go. Yay. Thank you so much. So when I call your name, come on up, okay? All right, so then we have Evan Zaragoza, and he is 7, and he is the son of Nicole DiMatina. And his cover or his topic was don't drink alcohol. All right. Next, we have Isla Wallace, and she is 8 years old. She is the granddaughter of Kathleen Courtney, and her topic was control your temper. All right, Isla. Then next, we have Gunnar Martin. He is age 9, and he is the son of Robert Martin. And his topic was, don't talk to strangers, especially during Halloween when you're getting candy. That's great, Gunnar. Next, and I know Serenity is here, so Serenity Hallowell, please come on up. Age 9, she is the daughter of Hope Zong, who we just saw previously. Thank you so much, Hope. And her topic, which I love, is time to get a flu shot. Fantastic job, Serenity. Then we have Violet Pinnells, age 9. She is the granddaughter of Marco Poolbill, and her topic was look both ways before you cross the road. I love this drawing, especially the bird. Next up, we have Layla Neiman, age 9. She is the daughter of Dan, actually, so that was just her sister. So come on up, and her topic was don't take things from strangers. Fantastic job. Thank you, honey. Then we have Maya Kelly, and she is age 9. She is the niece of Travis Sabatini, and hers was use sunblock. All right. Congratulations. Thank you. I was sweating that one there. I was like, hope we didn't miss one. Then we have Zoe Ulmberg. She's age 10 and the daughter of Kathy Ulmberg. And hers was, don't sit around when you're bored. I like that topic. Good job, Zoe. Then we have Layla Hewing. She's age 10, and she's the niece of Virginia Smith. And her topic was no smoking and wear your safety gear. I know Peter and Ben are excited to see that topic. So now we're going to go ahead and we're going to move into our winners for the 3 to 6-year-old category. Our first place winner is Weston Bembry. He is age 6. Come on up, Weston. All right. And he is the grandson of Barbie Brembry. And his topic was protect your skin, wear sunscreen. Second place is Sarah Yanko, age 5. And she is the daughter of Alma Yanko. and her topic was Never Swim Alone, which I think is a great topic. Wonderful, Sarah. Then we have third place winner is Lucy Martin Sabatini, age 4. Yay! Come on up, sweetheart. And she is the daughter of Travis Sabatini, and her topic was eat your fruits and veggies. Oh my goodness, she's going to need help with that. Fantastic. Now we will move on into our 7 to 10-year-olds. Come on up, first place winner, Lucas DeFritas. He is age 9. Grandson of Marga DeFritas, and his topic was gopher tortoise safety. Fantastic, great job. Next second place winner, and also near and dear to my heart, of course, is Sierra Higgs, age 9, and she is the daughter of Joseph Higgs, and it's Save the Earth, Plant Trees. Indeed. She's a budding urban forester, by the way. She's going to take my job. Then third place, we have Jacob Neiman, and he is age 10, and he is the son of Dan Neiman. And he has Cool Cats, Stay Safe. Now for our 11 to 14-year-olds, we have our first place winner, which is Jeffrey Hewing, and unfortunately he's not here, but he is the nephew of Virginia Smith, and his was Be Safe, Wear Your Safety Gear, even though he's climbing that tree over there, I see. Virginia.
Yelling at him now.
Then his sister, Abigail Hewing, is second place. She is age 13, and hers was Walk, Don't Run. So thank you very much. So now the moment we all have been waiting for. Who is the calendar cover winner? Yes. It is Weston Brembry. Fantastic. Up, Weston. You might need help with your gear, too. Yeah. Take a look. We're going to have to hold up the plaque so you can see it. Hold on. We want to feature that so that everyone can see. We put your drawing on a plaque for you. Here, hand it to me. I'll hold it up for everyone to see it. So, isn't that great? Yeah. Yes. And then he also got a color in submarine. I'm hoping his mother won't strangle me over that one. But that's going to take a little time, but I figure you're going to have a lot of fun with that and your family, too. Thank you so much. Congratulations, Weston. Congratulations, everyone. Fantastic job. And we look forward to seeing what you guys do next year. Thank you, Mayor and Council. Have a good evening.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
Oh, and by the way, I did leave calendars at the front, so if anyone here would like a copy, please feel free to help yourself.
Thank you and congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Agenda item number 5 is an ordinance. Mr. Reisman.
Yes, Mayor. This is the title of the ordinance establishing a process for trespass warnings. It's an ordinance to the City Council, City of Palm Coast, Florida, creating a new section, Chapter 9 of the City Code, establishing a process for the issuance of trespass warnings on public property. Providing notice requirements for trespass warnings, establishing an appeal process for trespass warnings, expanding the jurisdiction of the special magistrate to include the hearings of appeals from issued trespass warnings, providing for the repeal of prior inconsistent ordinances and resolutions, incorporation of the code, severability, and an effective date. Mayor, Council, we talked about this at workshop. This is an opportunity for us to get on the books, a specific process to deal with situations that we have had and may have in the future where we get somebody comes into a city property and does some things that creates public safety. And it's important for us to make sure that we do this in a way that protects everyone's rights, including the folks that, may be endangering the safety of, not just employees of the city, but the public as well. So what this ordinance does is to create that process, that due process, that allows folks, if they take this type of action and do these types of things, the city has a specific process that they can follow to give these individuals the right to object, the right to appeal, the right to say, no, that's not right. And it'll go to the special magistrate, which the city already has under contract, and it'll allow these folks, if they want to choose that process and to present their side of the story. And the special magistrate, sitting in his quasi-judicial capacity, will then make a ruling and determine what's the best thing to do in those situations. But again, this is something that the city believes is appropriate from the standpoint of protecting the rights of all individuals.
Council, any questions or comments on this agenda item?
I think it's needed.
Okay. Open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 5? Please do so at this time. None, I'll close public comment, take it back to this council, entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion to approve the ordinance.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number 6 is an ordinance. Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Mayor, Council, this is an ordinance to the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, sort of amending the City of Palm Coast Code of Ordinances by establishing a new section providing for the regulation of vapor generating electronic devices and liquid nicotine, providing for severability, providing for codification, for conflicts, and providing for an effective date.
Okay. Council, do we have any questions or comments on this? Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 6, please do so at this time.
My name is Celia Puglisi, and I certainly appreciate the initiative of our that is very welcome to prevent health issues in our youth, at least in the city. We set up a good precedent. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Jack Carroll, can I ask this ordinance, does it apply to selling, using, transmitting to another person? Because if it's applying to any of those, I don't know how you're going to enforce it. How are you going to tell somebody you can't smoke a cigarette-less cigarette? And the same as telling somebody you can't smoke a cigarette. It's an ordinance that just bypasses me, wondering why you waste time doing those things.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good evening. Mr. Neil Bach, Palm Coast. The enforcement portion of this, who does that fall upon? Thank you.
Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Mr. Reichman, if you just briefly, very briefly, please answer the last two questions. You seem to go on just a little bit.
Fair enough, Mayor. What we're trying to do here is regulate the nature of marketing of these. The first thing is that this ordinance does will prohibit an entity or person from selling, offering for sale, or providing a vapor generator electronic device for someone under 21. So it's to have the people that might sell these things for profit or whatever, keep them out of the, make sure they can't sell it to anyone under 21. The next thing that it does is it says wherever you can't smoke, then you're not allowed to vape. And again, that would be in a restaurant situation or something like that. And just trying to make sure we're consistent with where we currently, what's on the books right now for where smoking in public. And last but not least, this ordinance will prohibit people that are in the retail business selling these things from offering or trying to market these things in parts of the stores where a minor or anyone can just go up and pick them up and use them or steal them or buy them or whatever. They're going to be like the other things that you see. They're behind the counter or in the glass case and that sort of things. So from that standpoint, that would be another way that we can try to keep these out of the hands of folks that are young people that are in middle school and high school and so on. And that's what it does, Mayor.
Thank you. Any questions from the council? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion that the ordinance be accepted.
Second.
As read.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number 7 is a resolution approving a contract with Halifax Paving Incorporated for the street resurfacing program. Will there be a presentation, Mr. Morton?
There will be a discussion.
Yeah, just a discussion. I have a presentation if you'd like me to pull it up. This Halifax Paving contract, this item is to approve a contract with Halifax Paving to pave some of our arterial roads here in the city. It also includes a contingency fund and an amount approval of expenses for CEI services to monitor the testing of the work.
Council, any questions or comments?
Yeah, it was adequately explained at the workshop.
Any other member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 7? Please do so at this time.
Okay, I know that City of Puglisi again. Thank you for letting me speak. I know that Halifax Paving has even been doing work for the county on Culver Lane in the past. I would like, if we choose Halifax Paving, please to check during their work what kind of work they do. I hope this has gone to be Mr. Cole, because when they were working on Culver Lane, I had to call, and I even spoke with them, because part of the contract is the long-term paving of Culver Lane. They were supposed them to
I'm sorry. People in the audience, can you please not speak during public speaking? Thank you. Please go ahead.
Are you talking to me?
No, I'm sorry for the rudeness.
Okay.
I couldn't concentrate.
I'm sorry. I lost my minute.
Go ahead.
They were supposed to maintain the sidewalks, the cutting the grass, and they were not doing it. And it took me quite a few calls for them and the county to have them come their crews and do their work, because all along the size Grand Haven, it looked terrible, and they were not doing it, and it was part of the contract. I found that through the county. So finally they did it. So also they've been a paving. I don't know if it was Halifax Paving in Florida Park Drive, and it was brought up to the attention of our administrators in the meeting that we had for the Park Drive. There is a section there like was 70 feet when our pipes broke down underneath our sewer pipe. They repaved on top of it. And it's been a terrible work. I don't know if it was Halifax Paving. And also at the entrance of our neighborhood, there was a repaving dam, a patch also for something that broke underneath. And when the patch was paved, now every time that you go there, like in the Florida Park Drive, it's a kaboom, kaboom. So if they do a good work, I hope our city has a good oversight on their work.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Jack Carroll. I nothing against the pavers, but where are we getting the money from to do all these streets? Do we have a set aside program that you keep just the money, and where does that money come from? You know, sometimes you say, well, no, we're doing it from this standpoint, like taking it from one pocket and putting it in the other pocket. But it still comes out of both pockets, and it still comes out of the our own taxes. So I'm just curious, why don't we go back to that 0.5% sales tax to do the streets?
Next speaker.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. I only have one thing that I think that consideration is in scheduling different places to pave. And I have been noticing that from Pine Lakes to 100, Beltea has gotten worse and worse and worse. And I don't know where you are on the list or whether you I know you have a list and I know you have a schedule. Please put that TOPS on your schedule. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Hello again, Mr. Neubach, Palm Coast. You recently, or say finally, have filled a position for traffic manager, I guess you call him, who should look at this and that about the traffic. I believe the last study that these paving priorities were made on was about 3 years, maybe 4 years ago. And since then, you've had an influx of many, many people, thousands, and vehicles. I'd like to know when the city council will be briefed on an updated traffic road condition, a briefing or something to that effect. Because as we drive around here, those who go yard sailing or just going back and forth from work or wherever, your roads are deteriorating and the prioritization is out of date. Thank you.
Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Mr. Morton, if you just make sure that those items are addressed individually with the residents and any concerns.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, Council, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion to accept the resolution as proposed.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number 8 is a resolution approving agreements with FP&L and approval of the project costs associated for sidewalk relocation, restoration, and other unforeseen expenses for the streetlight program.
Yes, this item here, there's several agreements along Beltair, basically from the library down to State Road 100. It will add street lighting on both sides of Beltair. We do have street lights. There are some upfront costs with that program for FPL to come in and do some boring and install those street lights. Associated with that project in the agreements, there is some cost where the city will do the restoration work of laying that underground conduit, as well as relocating some sidewalks that are in conflict with the proposed pole locations. This is the next step in the process. We had gone through and done the design. FPL's reviewed the design. They've identified power locations. They put together these agreements. Once we approve these agreements and submit the initial upfront cost to them, they will then place it on construction schedule. We have been in contact and met with their construction staff. Currently, their time frame is about 5 months out of backlog of work. So we are looking for this work to begin in about 5 months. Is their tentative date that they gave us that, you know, we can't hold them to, but that's their projected start date.
Thank you. Council, any questions on this agenda item? I'll open up a public comment on this agenda item number 8.
Jack Carroll, Palm Coast. What is this? Don't answer Jack Carroll tonight? Thank you.
This Robin Scheffler. I may have missed this, so forgive me if I'm asking a question that's not germane. I may have missed it at a meeting. Are we discussing lights?
Is that what we're discussing?
Okay. May I ask a question then? What is the blue light now above red lights?
This is about street lights. This is about street lights. This is not about that topic.
That's not it? Okay.
No, thank you.
I didn't know it was germane or not, but I noticed that and I wanted some clarification.
Thank you.
John Brady, Palm Coast. I'm concerned about what's listed here as unforeseen expenses. We have an agreement with FPL, and we're going to have an open door for unforeseen expenses. Is there any kind of, they have to submit it to us, and it has to be verified, or just say, okay, it costs us much more, and we're going to pay for it. That wording is troubling. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Mr. Neubach again. The only question I have is how much money we've given these? How much tax money from the Palm Coast residents is being spent on this project? Thank you.
Next speaker. Kind of close public comment, take it back to this council, entertain a motion.
Make the motion. I make the motion.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'm opposed to go out and find out what the money is.
It's in the backup.
I don't have it here. I'm sorry. Can I ask the city manager, where's the funding coming from for this?
So the budget adoption section of your staff report, on the first page, it's coming from Street Improvements Fund. It's...
And I go.
Okay. Virginia, you got that?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay. All right. We will now open it up to public participation. If you've not chosen to speak at the beginning of the meeting, here's your opportunity to speak now. You have up to 3 minutes.
Did we vote on that item?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Just make sure.
Good evening. George Meadow, Palm Coast. Two questions. When is the projected finishing date for Beltair Boulevard, where the construction is going on, the road is blocked off, when that will be opened up? Question number two, if the city comes around to redo the swales and dig them out and then resod them, and if the pipe under your driveway is broken, clogged, or whatever, and needs to be replaced, and the city has to dig up your driveway to replace it, is that an expense part for the city, or is that an expense for the homeowner? And number three, when I arrived tonight and came in here, it was very hot. Mayor, I have asked this many times, and you have asked Mr. Morton to have staff take care of that. And it seems like maybe nobody has been designated, or it's deemed unimportant. So at this time, I will offer my free services as an unpaid intern for about a month to come in early before the meetings to turn down the air conditioning so it will be cool enough to have the meetings. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Mr. Neubach again. I'm very surprised that questions are being ignored when people come up in the beginning of the meeting and answered when council feels like answering. I was under the impression if you asked a question at public participation, you would get an answer. Apparently you don't. That's not right. And I think the council members should look themselves in the mirror and say, why not? Mr. Carr talked about traffic. Mr. Brady talked about Whiteview. Jack talked about a few things. Yes, some of them were opinionated, but some of just opinions or attaboys or I don't like it. But when there's a question like Whiteview, I think it should be answered. What is the status of Whiteview? Where is that money? Is it sitting obligated or only committed? Has any of it been disturbed, dispersed? What does the contract say? You know, something to that effect where, okay, we put the money aside, it's dead in the water, and we're going to put the money back in the treasury. What are we going to do? But the thing is, you ask a question, you don't get an answer. And that's not right.
Next speaker.
Dennis McDonald.
You spoke at the beginning of the meeting, Mr. McDonald. No, he did not, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next speaker. Close public comment. Mr. Morton, I've asked you publicly to please acknowledge and get back to the speakers that are spoken. Thank you. And we don't need Mr. Mayor to volunteer his time. Please make sure it's cool in here next time. Thank you. Okay. We will now move to discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Councilmember Kopp.
Nothing for this meeting, Your Honor.
Thank you. Vice Mayor Klupas.
Yes, I would first like to say that everyone should be attending our USTA event that we're holding over at the Palm Coast Tennis Center. I think that's tremendous, headlined by Riley Opelka, and it's going to be going on all week, and we have great weather, so everyone should be sure to get out there and enjoy that. And then also, I was hoping that I could bring up another young professional athlete that is up and coming. His name is Philip Rowe, and on February 15th, he actually has gotten a UFC contract. He won the Ultimate Fighter TV show, and he's from Palm Coast. He went to FPC, and he'll be making his UFC debut on February 15th. So wish him the best of luck, and everybody be sure to go check out the Tennis Center event this week. Thank you.
Thank you.
I've got a couple things. Number one, I was glad to see that all of the council members were present the other night at the Chamber of Commerce's installation. It certainly shows our support and gratitude for the things that they do. However, I am concerned, again, with the policy that we have where the city will pay our expense to attend this event. I think morally it's questionable. And I would like to make a motion at this time to rescind that policy. Unless we have a particular role in that event, we should pay our own way. We should not expect the taxpayer to pick up the burden. And so I leave the motion on the floor to rescind that policy. Hopefully I'll get a second. If not, you've spoken.
Next comment?
Next comment is I think that we've jumped ahead, put the cart before the horse with regards to the Dollar General store. I have been besieged by calls from the citizens, and Tobin did a great job in an assessment that was printed in the paper, and while we're under a moratorium, I gotta say, I was stunned because I have been following up with the correspondence I sent to members of the NBAA and enticing them to consider Florida. They're getting hammered up north in the snow belt. Another blizzard is coming tomorrow up there. And one of the people, obviously interested in what I sent them, asked me a question. Are you people anti-business because I see what you're doing with the Dollar General store? And I told them, no, that's not the case here. You know, we're just trying to catch our breath. But people are looking, and I'm concerned because I'm trying to push economic development, and I don't want people in the business community that I'm trying to bring here get the wrong impression, the wrong juju about our friendliness towards business. And that's my spiel.
Okay, thank you. And I have nothing for this meeting. Discussion by City Attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing, Mayor.
Thank you. Discussion by City Manager of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing, Mayor.
Thank you.
Yeah, I will motion to adjourn our meeting.
Thank you.